To me, AA is one of the great signs of spiritual awakening in our time. It is experimental in nature, not dogmatic, but none can doubt that God is what has made AA what it is today, what inspires it, what keeps it going, what is that perfectly intangible but absolutely unmistakable spirit that we have felt again and again since we have been here in St. Louis. I am thankful that the church has so widely associated itself with AA because I think AA people need the church for personal stabilization and growth, but also because I think the church needs AA as a continuous spur to greater aliveness and expectation and power. They are meant to complement and supplement each other. I believe that AA will go on serving men and women as long as it may be needed, if it keeps open to God for inspiration, open to one another for fellowship, and open to people outside for service. I think AA has been wise to confine its organized activity to alcoholics, but I hope and I believe that we may yet see a wide effect of AA on medicine, on psychiatry, on correction, on education, on the ever-present problem of human nature and what we shall do about it, and not least of all, on the church itself. I believe that AA has derived its inspiration and impetus indirectly from the insights and beliefs of the church. Perhaps the time has come for the church to be reawakened and revitalized by the insights and practices found in AA. I don't know any fields of human endeavor in which the 12 steps are not applicable and helpful. I believe AA may yet have a much wider effect upon the world of our day than it has already had, and may contribute greatly to the spiritual awakening which is on the way, but which has come none too soon, for the world of our time is not sitting pretty. And so, on this occasion, when AA turns a historic corner, when the leadership will fall upon a wider company than in the past, let us give thanks to God for his goodness to us, for the way he has guided and prospered and used and enriched and developed this wonderful force in our time, and for all the promise that AA holds out for uncounted thousands and perhaps millions in the future. God bless AA forever. Bill. It is a commonplace of AA to say that our leaders do not rule by mandate. They lead by example. Surely we have been led this morning by a magnificent example, an example without which this society might never have been. I think it is altogether fitting if, as my concluding part of this session, I recite to you the prayer of Francis, one of the saints whose example is so near and so dear to us all. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by giving that one receives, it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, and it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. 6. A friend looks at Alcoholics Anonymous. The friends of AA are legion. Their immense goodwill, and often their direct help, has been indispensable to our progress. Mr. Bernard B. Smith, the New York attorney whose address follows, has been notable for years because of the skilled devotion which he, as a trustee and as a chairman of AA's General Service Board, has long given our world affairs. His is an example of the kind of friendship which has always caused AA to prosper and to grow. The Individual, AA, and Society, by Bernard B. Smith, Chairman, General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous, 1951 to 1956. Based on talks by Mr. Smith at the first 6 General Service Conferences. As the time approached when I would cease to serve as chairman, I found myself thinking of many things. Of those exciting, early, struggling days when AA was taking form. Of the many friendships that AA has made possible for me, a non-alcoholic. Of the countless heartwarming experiences that have been mine within the fellowship of AA. Of the wonder that, in so short a time, AA could have produced a general service conference with so large a part of our society represented by its chosen delegates. More than anything else, perhaps, I thought of the miracle of timing in AA, how things seem to get started in AA only when the time is ripe, how we may be vexed at things delayed only to realize and appreciate later that they were delayed solely because the time for doing them had not yet arrived. And I thought of the finger of God determining our course, as individuals, as a fellowship, and in our relation to the world about us. Clearly, I thought, the 12 steps of AA must have been spiritually conceived to meet a serious and growing challenge to all of us, non-alcoholic as well as alcoholic. What is that challenge? It is the challenge to a generation that would deny the spiritual basis for human existence and accept in its place a currently socially accepted basis that is mechanistic and materialistic. It is a challenge to which AA will never yield, for the tenet of its faith and, indeed, its existence is founded on the certainty of a spiritual basis for life on earth. I confess that when I was first exposed to AA, I did not think in terms of broad social concepts or the application of great spiritual truths to the problems all men share in their pursuit of what each may dimly regard as happiness. The circumstances of this first exposure were rather prosaic. The early members of AA and certain of their non-alcoholic friends, conscious of the need to create a simple but effective service structure for the fledgling movement, needed a lawyer to help frame the document leading to incorporation of the Alcoholic Foundation, now known as the General Service Board of AA. A friend of mine who was and is a member of AA suggested that I meet Bill. I shall never forget that first meeting in my office, late one afternoon 15 years ago, and the evening we then spent together. And I shall always be grateful to my friend who brought Bill and me together on that memorable afternoon and evening. For in some mysterious way, I was ready for Bill's message. I learned something then from Bill for which all of my life, up to then, seems to have been a kind of preparation. What Bill was getting through to me was the then startling fact that in AA, when men cease to drink by applying the 12 steps to their lives, they are, in effect, beginning to live on a spiritual basis. And it struck me as a non-alcoholic that AA was a way of life for me, too, and for countless others like me, who had never sought escape in a bottle or in those other refuges to which men turn from the pressures of a materialistic world. The still-drinking alcoholic, as should be clear to all who observe mankind today, has no monopoly on unhappiness or on the feeling that life lacks purpose and fulfillment. In all the years since that first meeting with Bill, wonderful years, when it has been my privilege to serve as a member and as chairman of the General Service Board, I have never lost my initial awareness that AA is more than a fellowship for recovered alcoholics, that it is indeed a way of life for all who have lost their way in a troubled world. I have frequently attempted to define the fellowship of AA, with little success, until one day while in England, I listened to a broadcast delivered by Canon C.E. Raven, a noted British religious leader. In the course of the broadcast, Canon Raven set forth the conditions of a true fellowship in these words. Three conditions are necessary for a true fellowship. The possession of a common ideal involving a complete release from selfishness and division. The discharge of a common task big enough to capture the imagination and give expression to loyalty. And the comradeship, the togetherness thus involved, as we find out the joy and power of belonging to an organic society and engaging in a whole-time service. We can find it at its fullest extent where the ideal is highest and most exacting, where the task extends and integrates every ounce of our strength and every element of our being, where the comradeship is so solid and deep that we respond one to another without conscious effort, realize the unspoken need, and react to it spontaneously and at once. Under such conditions, all the vitality that we usually waste upon our jealousies and our vanities, upon keeping up appearances and putting other people in their proper place, becomes available for creative use. These words have meaning for AA, I believe, not only as a definition of a true fellowship and of our goals and attitudes, but as reminders that AA is not a static, passive social organism, but in its largest sense, a dynamic creative force that releases our latent power to live and act constructively. Not long ago, I was flying high over the deserts of our great Southwest. Here and there, almost out of nowhere, were tiny patches of lush green growth, surrounded by great expanses of brown, lifeless desert. My mind turned to the great springs of water lying under this desert expanse, which, if tapped, would cause the entire desert to flower. And I thought that God provides the water, but we have to dig the wells. Those green, lush patches I liken to our groups, where, with the faith derived from the 12 steps, we dug the wells that caused patches in the desert of life to flower. And I reflected how we have learned that we alone could not transform the desert in which we lived. We could not dig that well alone. For in AA, the whole is truly greater than the sum of all its parts. The infusing power of the group, of our fellowship, draws something more out of each of us than any of us by himself can supply. Each of us, in turn, draws out of the spiritual reservoir of our fellowship the added courage and will which makes each one the stronger and our fellowship the greater. What we can draw by living according to the tenets of AA is something more than what the materialist regards as happiness. Recently, I had occasion to examine the definition of happiness in a new unabridged dictionary. To my surprise, the first definition listed good luck, good fortune, prosperity. This materialistic definition is a long way from the concept of happiness to be found in AA. The second definition in that dictionary, however, was directly applicable to the kind of happiness men and women seek and find in AA, the kind that can be sustained by living in accordance with the 12 steps. This definition reads, a state of well-being characterized by relative permanence, by dominantly agreeable emotion, ranging in value from mere content to positive felicity, and by a natural desire for its continuation. Measured in terms of this definition, I believe that those who live by the principles of AA enjoy a greater measure of happiness than any class or group of people to which I have ever been exposed. I gave a great deal of thought to these definitions. I reflected, for example, that dictionary definitions follow current, socially accepted usage, and I was disturbed by the fact that the first definition of happiness should be couched in such materialistic terms as good luck, good fortune, prosperity. So I examined a number of dictionaries published in the 1890s. I found that the word prosperity appeared in none of these reference works under the definition of happiness. I then happened upon a standard dictionary published in 1927. By this time, the definition good luck, good fortune, prosperity had not only appeared, but reached second place. And by 1943, it had reached first place, supplanting that definition of happiness by which we in AA prefer to be blessed. And a totally material conception of happiness had now been accepted as a definition of the goal of men and women in modern society. One might say, therefore, that our 12 steps, judged by the socially accepted standard of happiness of this age, are steps backward. But they are steps backward into the universal heart of man, back into the true spirit of man. The world will have moved forward when our dictionary definition of happiness is revised backward. Truths emerging in a materialistic society are bound at times to be paradoxical. Consider, for example, the simple statement, I am an alcoholic. The first time a man or woman stands before us and says, I am an alcoholic, he speaks those words when he no longer drinks alcohol. Thus, when the time comes that members describe themselves as alcoholics, society ceases to regard them as such. Yet it is only at the moment when a member ceases to drink that he asserts the right to describe himself as an alcoholic. When alcoholics live materialistically and drink excessively, they refuse to accept the label of alcoholic. Yet when they cease to drink, and when they say to themselves and to the world, we are alcoholics, the world refuses to see them as such. What an unthinking world may look upon as defeat, alcoholics in AA know as a triumph of the spirit, a triumph of humility over false pride and self-centeredness. How few human beings ever have the courage to stand up before their neighbors and, in humility, describing themselves truthfully to say, this is what I really am. There are two moments in which utterance of the words, I am an alcoholic, have great significance. There is the first time a member speaks those words at an AA meeting. There is, however, another and earlier time which is perhaps of even greater significance. That is the moment when a man says to his sponsor, in the darkness and desperation of his soul, I am an alcoholic. And this moment points to another paradox in AA. The paradox is that the member of AA approaches his suffering alcoholic brother not from the superiority and strength of his position of recovery, but from the realization of his own weakness. The member talks to the newcomer not in a spirit of power, but in a spirit of humility and weakness. He does not speak of how misguided the still suffering alcoholic is. He speaks of how misguided he once was. He does not sit in judgment of another, but in judgment of himself as he had been. Society, in referring to the alcoholic, employs the expression, the enslavement of alcohol. For the AA member, this statement is in a very special sense paradoxical too, if indeed it is true at all. In sober fact, the member was never enslaved by alcohol. Alcohol simply served as an escape from personal enslavement to the false ideals of a materialistic society. Yet if we accept society's definition of the alcoholic's earlier state as enslavement by alcohol, the AA member can no longer resent it, for it has served to set him free from all the materialistic traps with which the paths through the jungle of our society are set. For the alcoholic first had to face materialism as a disease of society before he could free himself of the illness of alcoholism and be free of the social ills that made him an alcoholic. Men and women who use alcohol as an escape are not the only ones who are afraid of life, hostile to the world, fleeing from it into loneliness. Millions who are not alcoholics are living today in illusory worlds, nurturing the basic anxieties and insecurities of human existence rather than face themselves with courage and humility. To these people, AA can offer as a cure no magic potion, no chemical formula, no powerful drug. But it can demonstrate to them how to use the tools of humility, honesty, devotion, and love, which indeed are the heart of the 12 steps of our recovery. There is still another paradoxical statement by human society which has special application to AA. That statement is the saying that a chain is as strong as its weakest link. The accepted connotation is that a chain is strong only if it has no weak links. The paradox of this statement as applied to AA is that in AA, the chain is as strong as its weakest link. For the endless chain of AA grows in strength to the extent that it is able to reach the weak links, the still suffering alcoholic men and women about us. It is upon this paradoxical truth that the assurance of the survival of the fellowship rests. The perpetuation of AA is grounded in the so-called weakness of those human beings who escape the materialistic bases of society through the medium of alcohol. It is because we know the tremendous impact that AA can have on generations that will follow us that we have been so painstaking in building a structure of service of AA in the General Service Board, the General Service Conference, and the many service agencies that perform the essential daily tasks of carrying the AA message throughout the world. It is with good reason that Bill has described this structure of service as a legacy, deserving of the same attention and understanding accorded the first legacy of the 12 steps and the second legacy of 12 traditions. But this third legacy of service has a string to it, and the string is that we are granted the use of this legacy for our lifetime upon the condition that we will not only look after it, but increase its spiritual content for the generations that will follow us. Each succeeding generation, as it receives this legacy, must similarly protect it if they wish to employ it and gain life by it and pass it on to the next generation with an enriched spiritual content. The General Service Conference of AA is, of course, the practical instrument for preserving, enhancing, and administering this great third legacy of service. The concept of the conference from the beginning has been simple and compelling. It is grounded in the belief that all of us who have been associated with AA during its early growth and development owe an obligation to society. That obligation is to ensure that this fellowship survives, that this flame of faith, this beacon light of hope for the world, must never be extinguished. We may not need a General Service Conference to ensure our own recovery, but we do need it to ensure the recovery of the alcoholic who still stumbles in the darkness seeking the light. We need it to ensure the recovery of some newborn child inexplicably destined to alcoholism. We need it to provide, in keeping with the 12th step, a permanent haven for all alcoholics who in the ages ahead can find in AA that rebirth which brought its first members back to life. We need it because we are conscious of the devastating effect of the human urge for power and prestige, which must never be permitted to invade AA. We need a conference to ensure AA against government while insulating it against anarchy. We need it to protect the fellowship against disintegration while preventing overintegration. We need it so that Alcoholics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous alone may be the ultimate repository of its own 12 steps, its 12 traditions, and all of its services. We need a conference to ensure that changes within AA come only as a response to the needs and wants of all AA and not of any few. We need it to ensure that the doors of the halls of AA shall never have locks on them, so that all people with an alcoholic problem for all time to come may enter these halls unmasked and feel welcome. We need it to help ensure that Alcoholics Anonymous never asks of anyone who needs help what his or her race is, what his or her creed is, or what his or her social position is. I have considered it a priceless privilege and a great inspirational experience to have been able to serve AA as chairman of the General Service Board for so many years, a position which also enabled me to serve as chairman of the first six General Service Conferences. When I retired as chairman following the sixth conference in April 1956, I did not feel that I was stepping out of AA. No one who is a part of AA, as I feel I have been, steps out. He just steps aside. He continues to serve in the ranks, giving of himself as humbly and as ably as he can. I did not tender my resignation as chairman because I no longer wanted to be chairman. I have enjoyed the responsibility. I have found, as a non-alcoholic, great self-fulfillment in the trust that so many have granted to me. To state one more paradox, I am resigning as chairman out of my love for and devotion to AA. For I declared many years ago, and have continued to believe, that AA must insulate itself against the proprietary right to serve. No man must have the right to remain in office in AA indefinitely. The very fact that no one has sought my resignation, and indeed that the contrary is happily true, is all the more reason to reaffirm the tradition of rotation in all AA service positions. Someday, this tradition that no one should serve as chairman for an indefinite period may prove more valuable than we appreciate today. Certainly, it is in keeping with the expanding, unwritten body of tested tradition that is being accepted throughout AA, that while AA is important to the existence of the individual, no individual must be vital to the existence of AA. It is AA that is important. Important to those whom society has rejected and to those who have rejected society. Important indeed to all of human society as a symbol of the power of the great spiritual reservoir upon which all may draw who aspire to a true way of life. This precious message which we have received and by which we try to live has resulted in our achieving a far greater measure of human happiness than is the lot of the average human being who walks the earth today and who has not been subjected to the acute suffering of alcoholism. We must, however, as individuals and as a fellowship, always be concerned with a structure of service of Alcoholics Anonymous which protects and expands our way of life. For we will continue to owe to the generations yet unborn a solemn obligation to ensure that this way of life is available to them, as it has been to us. As a non-alcoholic, and as a student of those great social movements from which we derive the best of our heritage today, I regard the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous as the outstanding spiritual phenomenon of our century. I see in the concept of living, which is embodied in Alcoholics Anonymous, a glorious hope for all of mankind. For the members of this fellowship are truly witnesses of the living truth that man can live the life of the Spirit and still function effectively in a materialistic world. And so this first generation in the life of AA draws to a close. It is rich in its faith, large in its numbers, and dedicated to its purpose. I am grateful that I have been privileged to observe its emergence in our society. And now, stepping aside as chairman of AA's movement-wide service agency, I confess to only one regret, and that is that I did not have the skill or the gifts that would have enabled me to do more than the little I have tried to do to further the purposes of this great and enduring fellowship.